You are now listening to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast with Dr. Taylor Crick. Dr. Taylor is an expert in helping those suffering with autoimmune disease, and he himself has autoimmune disease. Autoimmunity is rampant today. The purpose of this podcast is to educate about the underlying causes and natural solutions to halt autoimmune disease progression. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. For more information from Dr. Taylor, visit www.autoimmuneeducationacademy.com. Without further ado, here's your host, Dr. Taylor Crick.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Taylor Crick, and I love explaining the underlying mechanisms behind autoimmunity and chronic and complex diseases. Today's topic is about autoimmune intestinal autoimmunity or digestive autoimmunity. So celiac, inflammatory bowel diseases, Crohn's, colitis, things like that. Not getting too detailed today. I'm going to stay kind of big picture with these things. Intestinal autoimmunity, really, really important thing, especially celiac. You know, Crohn's and colitis are very important, but typically when you have those, you know that you have them because your symptoms are going to be like, oh my gosh, something is wrong with my bowels. But celiac, sometimes the presentations are extra intestinal or outside of the intestines. So as always, you can find more information on our website at www.autoimmuneeducationacademy.com. We have articles, recipes, lab tests. You can figure out how to work with me, things like that, all through that website. I also have an extensive YouTube channel, which is under my clinic's name, Washington Wellness Center or Wash Wellness Center. And you can find me on Instagram at Autoimmune Doc, is my account there. And actually, if you're listening to this as it's being released, I think that next week I'll be doing a takeover for Autoimmune Paleo on Instagram as well. So I don't do social media very much, and I don't do Facebook. So Instagram is a great place to follow, and it's something that we're starting to even put out more good stuff on there. So again, autoimmunity is rampant today. It's a huge problem. It's my specialty. It's what I see. But I work with chronic and complex cases all the time. So a lot of times for me, like let's say somebody comes in with an inflammatory bowel disease or disorder, they might have Crohn's or colitis, or they might just be kind of on the spectrum of Crohn's or colitis, and they might not be diagnostic, or they might have not had a full, you know, biopsy or colonoscopy, or they might just not have a full diagnosis, but they know that something's going on. And I think that if you're listening to this podcast today, you know, I hope that this is not the first time that you've heard that gut health is really, really important for autoimmune disease. So gut health is one of the most important underlying precipitating factors for autoimmune disease, even non-digestive autoimmune disease. So lupus, MS, rheumatoid arthritis, Hashimoto's, you know, the most common autoimmune diseases all have a gut component. So today I'm talking about the diseases that are specific to the gut, but I also can't get past talking about just gut health in general. So So looking back into history, you know, this is not a new concept, even though it has really taken off again in the last 20 years or so. But Hippocrates told us that bad digestion is the root of all evil. So that's been around for many thousands of years. And then even in the 1800s, different people like Louis Kuhn, and in the early 1900s, Eli Metchnikoff. Metchnikoff won the Nobel Prize in Medicine for his work on the digestion, on the intestines, rather, and like probiotics and things like that. And one of his most famous messages was that death begins in the colon. So this has been around for a really long time, or it's been observed for a really long time, that the gut is important. But now we now know how crucial it is for the development of autoimmune disease. And if you've been around long enough, which most people I think listening to this have been, you kind of remember when a time when gut health wasn't that in vogue, it wasn't that talked about. It would be like, it would be very, very odd 25 years ago for your general practitioner to recommend you take probiotics or to do things for your gut. And now it's just come leaps and bounds. Now, part of this is still in the Stone Ages, because as we're going to talk about in this episode, there are gastroenterologists and many, you know, that really have their head just stuck anywhere you can say that the sun don't shine, like stuck in the sand. But they will tell you that your food doesn't matter. They will tell you that probiotics don't matter. Things like that aren't going to help. That's just absolute insanity. And it's not evidenced by the current literature. It's somebody that's living, you know, 25 years ago. So if they went to school 40 years ago, they might actually believe that that's true, but it's absolutely not. We now know a lot about these gut conditions. We now know a lot about gut conditions leading to autoimmune conditions. We now know a lot about how to diagnose them, how to detect them on labs. We also now know a lot of ways to treat them pharmaceutically and naturally. And really a lot of, even in these inflammatory bowel conditions, sometimes the natural solutions, if you catch it early enough, work better. There's not a lot of, like, immunosuppressants don't work as well for IBD as they do for rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or psoriatic arthritis or something like that. So anyway, I'm getting off track. So a human will have consumed between 3 and 7 tons of food in a lifetime. That's an insane amount. Much of this food is potentially antigenic, meaning it's going to stimulate an immune response. So there's bacteria, there's molds, there's fungus, there's yeast, there's viruses, and there's food particles. Some of these antigens are absolutely no threat to the gut, while others may be harmful. So in predisposed individuals, over time, you can develop an immune reaction to certain antigens, and it causes inflammation in the gut. So let me start with this. Let me start with some basics. We're going to start with basics, and then we're going to expand into these bigger, more complex conditions. So the first thing that's really important to understand is that the gut has its own immune system, meaning not just like we've all heard that 70 to 80% of your immune system resides around your gut. That's in what's called the gut-associated lymphoid tissue. That means literally like right around your gut. After things get in, there's defenses that are lymphoid, so in your body. But in your gut, there's a mucosal immune system that is different. It is a frontline defender. It is measured on labs by something called IgA. IgA is the main immunoglobulin, IgM as well, mucosal immune system. And there's also even a high Th17. So if you listen to the last episode, Th17 is very bad. But in the gut, internal gut, it's really, really good because it helps fight pathogens and things. So that's the first thing to know, is that a food or an antigen can trigger the mucosal immune system inside the gut, or it can break through the gut barrier, and then it's going to trigger an IgG reaction, which is more of a systemic reaction. So that's just maybe some semantics, but really, really important thing to understand, that there is this mucosal immune system in the gut. So let's start with intestinal permeability, and not being an autoimmune disease, but leading to autoimmune diseases, and being, you know, kind of the start of this inflammatory bowel disease kind of spectrum. So a lot of people have leaky gut or intestinal permeability. In fact, we all do. It's a normal and important thing. Permeability is transient. So, you know, if you get diarrhea, if you get travelers, let's say you get a food poisoning, let's say, your gut is going to open up those gut cells. It's going to dump water in there, and it's going to give you diarrhea, and you have a leaky gut. Or let's say we all go out drinking this Saturday night and we all get hammered drunk. Well, we all have a leaky gut. Like, the gut is designed to be permeable, but you don't want it to be permeable all the time. You don't want repeated entry of food antigens. So over time, through things like stress, through things like low vitamin D, stress is going to affect the mucosal immune system. So it's going to affect the IgA, secretory IgA, in the mucosal immune system. And it's going to make the gut more susceptible to problems, things like stress, things like hormones, antibiotics, poor food, low vitamin D. All these things over time slowly wear down the defenses of the gut to protect against antigens and to protect against letting things in. So over the time, the gut gets more leaky and more permeable. Now, that is detected on labs through looking for antibodies against tight junctions in the gut. And there's two different kinds of leaky gut, that one's more severe than the other, and I'll talk about those in just a second. But when the gut gets leaky, then food particles are able to get past the gut and into the bloodstream, where they're going to be taken to lymph nodes in that GALT, that gut-associated lymphoid tissue. They're going to be taken to mesenteric lymph nodes and be presented as antigen, and then the body can develop a immune response against those, and that can lead to autoimmunity. So this is a lot easier, in my opinion, when I'm drawing it, but that's exactly what happens with leaky gut. So you can have, again, you can have leaky gut, and you don't have Crohn's, you don't have colitis, you don't have celiac, you don't even have any symptoms. A lot of people can have leaky gut, but after it's been detectable on labs, it's a sign that it's been there long enough, it's been there consistently enough that your immune system has begun to mark antibodies against it. So when we measure antibodies for leaky gut, it can tell us a little bit about the type of leaky gut that we have. So again, there's two different types. One is called transcellular, and one is called paracellular. And I'll do a podcast on it at some point, certainly. And I have videos on it on my YouTube channel about the different testing. I have posts about it on Instagram, etc. But so transcellular means that, or let's start with paracellular. Paracellular is what you typically see in like a drawing of the two gut cells are spreading apart and something's getting in between those two gut cells. So if you are, you know, I don't know if you're in America, maybe other countries too, but we used to play a game called Red Rover, and where you try to break through a chain of people and you try to break in between two people and you try to break their arms apart. That is paracellular. You're getting it in between two gut cells and you're kind of like sliding in because the space between those gut cells has kind of opened up and allowed you to slide through. Transcellular is much, much worse, and it goes right through the middle of the cell. So anyway, that's intestinal permeability. That's not an inflammatory bowel disease, but it is an important concept as we move into the rest of these things. Leaky gut, though, is really, really important. It can be detected and, you know, all the things. But again, it could be in a whole other podcast because it's relevant for Hashi's or RA or lupus or, you know, rheumatoid or any of the other autoimmunities. Now, the next one is celiac disease. Now, celiac, the problem with celiac is that when you consume gluten, it opens those gut cells up. So that's why I want to start by talking about leaky gut, because again, it's transient. It's not always open. It's not like your door's wide open all the time, but it's like, hey, sometimes you leave your door unlocked and you make yourself more susceptible to something bad happening. Celiac is like every time you leave the house, you just leave your front door wide open. It's like, okay, you're kind of asking for it now. So celiac, when a celiac patient eats gluten, there is a response that takes place, and something called zonulin is released. And so zonulin can be measured. Zonulin is a kind of controversial lab test, in my opinion. Zonulin levels fluctuate throughout the day, so it doesn't necessarily diagnose leaky gut, but you can measure zonulin. But so when you eat gluten, zonulin is released, and zonulin is like a zipper, just unzipping your gut kind of top to bottom, like zip, okay, we are wide open. Our gut cells are wide open. So the problem with celiac is that first off, I'll talk about it, that it damages the gut lining. But the big problem with celiac, in my opinion, is that it opens the gut up and leaves you more susceptible to other autoimmunities. So celiac is very, 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 very common to have other autoimmunities. I've actually had a ton of celiac people in this week. And the celiac kids, people with celiac and Addison's, people with celiac and RA, people with celiac and Hashi's, and probably some people with undiagnosed celiac as well. So the way that celiac is diagnosed is officially, you know, a biopsy is the gold standard. You have to have a biopsy. But the lab tests are, first you look for a gluten sensitivity. So you look for a gliadin IgA. So again, IgA is inside the gut, so it's inflaming the inside of the gut, and it's triggering that mucosal immune system. Then the other thing you look for is something called tissue transglutaminase. Now, transglutaminases are enzymes that are expressed in certain tissues. So this is transglutaminase 2 that's expressed in the gut. And when you see high levels of antibodies against tissue transglutaminase 2, you can tell that there's a gluten-mediated attack against the gut lining. Now, what happens in celiac is the gluten opens up the leaky gut cells, releases zonulin, but it also attacks the gut lining and inflames it to the point where it wears away the little hairs that are inside the gut lining. Now, again, if you're on Instagram, my suggestion would be get on my Instagram at autoimmunedoc and look back at the posts we did. You know, depending on when you listen to this, we did it yesterday, but it shows these little hairs. These hairs are crazy. Because, and you may have heard this before, but your gut lining, if you spread it out, it would cover the surface area of an entire tennis court. I've heard it said two tennis courts. They've since changed that to a little more than one tennis court, but a huge, huge, huge amount. And the way that it does this is all these little hairs. These little hairs are like the grass on your lawn. And so with celiac, the attack, the gluten-mediated attack, the inflammation basically wears those hairs off. And when you lose those hairs, it's called the villi. So it's called villous atrophy. When you lose those hairs, then you get malabsorption, and then you get major, major, major problems. You get anemia, you get vitamin deficiencies, you get constipation, bloating. You know, again, a lot of celiac symptoms can be extra intestinal, so you might even get neurological symptoms. You might get joint pain, you might get fatigue, but you've worn down the gut. So again, a lot of people, let's say they have joint pain, and they're like, oh crap, I have rheumatoid arthritis. And then when they go looking, they have celiac. And they may have had celiac for who knows how long, maybe 10 or 20 years, and they've continued to eat gluten. And maybe that led to their rheumatoid arthritis, but they never noticed the gluten or the celiac symptoms. And they just notice the joint pain, and then that's how they discover this. So anyway, my next episode is going to be all about celiac and almost celiac, like non-celiac gluten sensitivity. But that is true celiac. Again, it's diagnosed by a gliadin IgA, tissue transglutaminase 2 antibodies, and a biopsy to see if there's villous atrophy, to see how extensive the damage is in that celiac. Now, next I want to jump right into inflammatory bowel disease, which are Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, because they're very, very similar, but they're also, you know, different. And a lot of times in the gastro world, what you're going back and forth between is like, is it apples or is it oranges? They're different, but they're really, really similar. And again, a lot of times the diagnosis is just trying to put a name on it so they can pick, you know, kind of which drug to use, but they're very, very similar processes. And again, like the last two processes, if you've listen to, or I guess after I've talked about those last two processes, you kind of understand these processes as well. They're just a little bit different. They're not gluten mediated, but they're autoimmune attack against the gut lining that causes inflammation. Now, the inflammation is not just against the villi. It doesn't just cause villous atrophy. It eats through the entire lining of the digestive system. So that is the bad news. So Crohn's disease is an inflammatory bowel disease. It occurs most commonly in like kind of younger aged patients, 15 to 35. And it can't be suppressed that easily, again, with immunosuppressants. Crohn's can occur in any part of the digestive tract. It can occur in the mouth. It can occur in the anus. It can occur in the esophagus, anywhere through. And Crohn's affects all of the layers of the intestinal tract. So that's the biggest difference, is where the lesions are, something called skip lesions, and they can go all the way through the digestive tract. So when they look at that on biopsy or endoscopy or colonoscopy, they can see these lesions. The symptoms of Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis are very, very similar. They can both cause pain. They can both cause blood in the stool. They can both cause diarrhea, they can both cause fever, and they can both cause malnutrition and malabsorption. So a lot of people with Crohn's, they will have vitamin D deficiency, they will have folate deficiency or different B vitamin deficiencies, and a lot of people with ulcerative colitis have iron deficiencies, but neither one of those are just exclusive to those diseases. A lot of people can have celiac and have both of those as well. A lot of people with celiac have anemia and vitamin D deficiency and folate deficiencies. And some of those are side effects of the disease. And some of those are also causative or correlative mechanisms of the disease as well. Like vitamin D is a great example of, as vitamin D goes up, your gut protection goes up and your risk for systemic autoimmunities or for autoimmune processes goes down. So is that, and then as you get an inflammatory bowel disease, your absorption of vitamin D goes down. So it's kind of a vicious cycle that goes both ways. Again, rectal bleeding, a little bit less common in Crohn's. But with ulcerative colitis, there's usually a lot of blood in the stool. And I've heard of people that are just like I've filled the bowl, the toilet bowl is just filled with blood, and it's like, you know that it's a concern. Now, there are some blood markers that are helpful for this, and in my world, you know, I measure them more often, but typically in the gastro world, the diagnosis is done again through tissue biopsy or histology, but they're called ASCA-ANSA antibodies. And one is more common in Crohn's, that's the ASCA, and then the anti, the neutrophilic ones are more common in ulcerative colitis. That's all I want to say about these diseases. You can go to, you know, WebMD if you want to hear the stats about them, but I do want to talk a little bit about some of my examples with them, because they're varied. Sometimes I've had Crohn's and ulcerative colitis patients that I've not been able to help, straight up. I mean, they're just... like their C-reactive proteins, which is an inflammatory marker, are in the hundreds. And it's just like, I don't think that any amount of like probiotics or diet or fasting or bone broth or like nothing's going to bring them back. Their gut is destroyed. And they have to get parts of their colon resected and removed. Now, after that, they could do really well. So it's still like, gosh, sometimes after they get your colon surgery, it's like, oh my gosh, it's a miracle. I feel so much better. And some people go back to eating pizza and drinking beer. And it's like, you're an idiot, first off. No disrespect, but you're an idiot. I mean, you know, idiots are idiots. And so no disrespect. Again, it's just an observation. But like, come on. Yeah, I don't know. I have no sympathy for that type of person. But again, sometimes they're very, 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 very severe. Sometimes we have been able to help. I've seen a lot of people reverse these conditions with restrictive diets, you know, special diets. Sometimes it's there's other conditions, though, too. You know, sometimes, again, there's celiac. Sometimes there's bloating. Sometimes they need to go more a plant-based diet. Sometimes they need to go more animal-based diet and avoid a lot of fibers that can be really harsh on the gut. So it's very, very, very customized. But the underlying concepts are very, very similar. I can tell you that recently, and then another one too, I'll say, is IBS, which is sometimes is just not yet diagnosed inflammatory bowel disease. But again, what I was going to say is that I've seen great results with a lot of these people that are having blood in their stool, that are having to rush to the bathroom, that are, you know, unable to go to Costco or unable to go to a movie with their friends or unable to go out and live their life because they need to be tied so close to a bathroom. Unable to go out on a boat, you know, things like that. Unable to wear a swimsuit. Some people, they've got, you know, some leakage or continence problems. But I would say that, again, there is absolutely, admittedly, a time and a place where there is nothing that I can do and go to your gastro and get your surgery. That is where you are at and what is needed. But we see really, really good results with a lot of these cases as well. Now, I think they're actually, I don't say they're easy. But if you have Hashimoto's or you have lupus or you have MS or you have RA, we got to fix your gut and then go fix everything else. And in the intestinal autoimmunity, we just got to fix your gut because that is everything else. But so I don't think that they're that complex. But again, every puzzle is very, 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 very unique. So I'm certainly not trying to say that they're easy. But again, if you've got MS, we got to fix your gut and then figure out what's triggering your neuro autoimmunity and address your immune system, address your toxins, address your T cell balance, address your blood brain barrier, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But in the gut, we're looking at a lot of, what are your food triggers? What are we eating? What can we do to decrease this inflammation? And what's triggering the inflammation? And then what can we do to decrease it? So again, as with most episodes, I wound up just kind of ranting for a while there. but I think it was really good. I hope it was really good. Give me a rating and a review if you like that. Next episode's going to be more specific. If you have Crohn's or colitis, I'm not going to do any more specific about the stats on those, but I do think I'm going to do an episode interviewing a friend of mine who has healed ulcerative colitis and just talk about that, talk about some of our examples. And I also have a possible episode of a couple case studies of some IBS, IBD that has responded really well in multiple different case studies with that. And I will say, the last thing I'll say, this is the one category, the only category where I think I see majority men. Men are not that likely to come in. I mean, I see men with IBD and they're like, yeah, I poop on the side of the road a couple times a day. No big deal. I'm like, really? That's not a big deal. Like, you pull your car over and you poop on the side of the road and that's not a big deal to you. But this is really common in men. So it is one thing that men are willing to ask for help for when it gets to that point. But again, leave a rating, leave a review. Next episode is going to be about celiac and non-celiac gluten sensitivity, or almost celiac, undiagnosed celiac is really, really, really common and is really, really important in autoimmunity. So rating and a review, get on that Instagram if you want to see some of those pictures about the microvilli, autoimmuneeducationacademy.com. Again, it's autoimmune doc on Instagram. And yeah, talk to you guys next time.